Hot 91's All Things Property with Direct Collective.
You're with Jade and Mel Kaylee from Direct Collective here on the podcast talking all things property. And this week we are diving into all the nitty gritty stuff, Mel, which I love. I'd love to get your thoughts on. And of course, I'm talking about lending. Now, Tuesday, of course, the RBA will meet again to discuss our interest rates. Historic low, 0.1%. Everybody knows, well, the general consensus to start with, Mel, is that it's not moving too far, because there's always that fear when people buy real estate, especially in a market where there's nice low interest rates like this, that the rates will go up, payments will go up, and then panic will kind of occur. Do we need to worry about that in the short term?
I would suggest not. Okay, so I know there's a lot of banks and a lot of economists saying that we can expect interest rate rises because of the activity in the market, but that's following, you know, what they call a return to trend type model. But there's been a structural shift in the market, in our economy, what's happening globally. But most importantly, the RBA has come out very clearly and said we don't see any lift in rates in the short term. And there's a number of factors around that. So that means the cost of funds is likely to stay low, which will continue to stimulate the market from a big picture point of view.
Now, one thing I don't understand, and I want you to please clarify this for me, and I've had lots of conversation online about this as well, people asking us to discuss this, because it's very hard to understand. Banks often will just rise or put, you know, up their interest rates. Now, what I don't understand is how, if it's at 1%, and we can clearly see, we know the cash rate's 1%, yet we've got banks out there with all different interest rates and different lending rates out there. Quite often they will just put them up without a rate rise, an official cash rate rise. Why do they do this? How do they get away with it? I just, as a consumer, I don't quite understand how they can do that. You said something about returning to normal trend or something like that. Talk to me about what you think the banks might do in the next year or two.
So the banks, keep in mind, they're places that sell money. Okay, so they sell money by buying money at a certain rate and selling it at a higher rate. So, you know, my view on variable interest rates versus fixed is banks pay a lot of people to try and make money out of setting fixed rates. So there's been a couple of opportunities in the past recently where there's you could have made money, but at the end of the day, that's their job, to make money out of selling money. So they have to look at their cost of funds. So the cash rate, yeah, that rate where the Reserve Bank sets that this base rate is just one component of how they borrow their money. And so there's a range of different factors that come into it. So there is a gap between that and then what a bank actually pays for the money, and then there's the profit margin they put onto it and put it out to us. So sometimes bank rate movements are outside of what's happening with the cash rate.
It just seems weird to me, though, because I understand the fact that, yes, they buy the money at a certain rate, then they push it off to the consumer at a different rate for a profit. Obviously, that's how they work. But, I mean, we've had such a low, historic low cash rate for so long. At what point, I guess what I want to know is, as a consumer, for people out there who have got current loans or are looking at getting loans, yes, there's the big variable versus fixed debate, which we'll definitely touch on in a second, but talk to me about whether you think that the banks will increase their rates independent of what the cash rate does. Because we've got the RBA in that saying, look, this cash rate's not going anywhere for a while. And that's all great to think that. But should we be worried that the banks might put theirs up at some stage before the cash rate moves?
It's a really great question. And my response is yes and no.
Where's the crystal ball?
Okay. So there's two parts to this discussion. Okay. Part of what you're saying to me is what the general consensus is in how we communicate in the community about the banks, because what we're talking about is the Big Four. Now, there was in 2017, there was a fundamental shift in how other non-bank banks, you know, so not the Big Four, how other banks and how non-banks were able to get their money, the money they're buying in, and the way they could buy that money in so that they could sell it. So essentially what happened was a position was taken by the federal government which changed the competitive environment. So I would suggest that when you had four big banks that were too big to fail, it was the first step in a takedown. Okay. Now, we couldn't afford for any of them not to be profitable. But when you look at APRA, who knew the things that the banks were doing for 20 years, why did they wait till 2018 before they started a Royal Commission? All right. So now we're going to start a whole other discussion here. Yeah. But to try to stay on track of the question. So, but where I'm going with this is, since 2017, there has been a structured change in the industry, which meant more banks are now able to lend money to us. So if you think about how many new banks, online banks you've seen, RACQ is now a bank.
I know, right? They keep popping up.
So this has been a shift on a whole range of fronts. And what that means is that there's more competition in the market. So
well,
this is a great thing for lenders.
Yeah, this is good.
Great thing for consumers. So the more lenders there are, the more choice that we have, the more competitive that they have to be. So some of those interest rate movements that you saw previously that were not aligned with the cash rate, we haven't really seen those in the last 2 years with everything that's happened with competition.
Well, that's good.
So what I would suggest is we're unlikely to see a lot more of that. There is some circumstances which suggest that the cost of funds for lenders may increase without the cash rate increasing, and that might be passed on. But I'm really not expecting that because of the competition in the marketplace today.
Okay, well, that's really good to know. And I can see what you're talking about. I've seen lots of different lending institutions seem to pop up, you know, in the last couple of year or two. Now, talk to me quickly about, it's probably not a quick conversation, actually. It's one that everyone talks about, fixed versus variable.
Yeah.
Is there a clear cut in this market? What would you be suggesting to someone? Because, again, I mean, the rates are so low and even the fixed rates are so low. They're fairly attractive. You know, they're saying, yeah, oh, you can lock in, you know, 5 years at, you know, high threes or four, whatever it's at the moment. It's sort of like, it's pretty attractive.
Yeah. So the longer term fixed rates are working on the play that people believe that interest rates are going to rise. You know, it's in the bank's interest to say that we believe the Reserve Bank should raise rates. So people lock in at those higher rates for the longer term because what they believe is that rates will be lower. So it's about them trying to make money. Mm. There are some short term opportunities as there have been in the past. Like we've seen some fixed rates recently around 1.89. Which is great, but they're very short term. And those are good rates, but that's not really what the question is about. The question is about is what's important to me. And as a consumer, if you're sitting there saying that I just want to know how much I'm paying, I don't want it going up and down, I don't want things to change, then lock it in because that's going to give you the
peace
of mind.
Easier to budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would suggest history shows us that over the longer term, you're always better off on a variable rate.
Oh, now there's the gold right there. That's what I was waiting for. Okay. Because it is one of those things long term. You know, I'm sure there's ebbs and flows. And someone who locked in, you know, a great fixed rate maybe 2 or 3 years ago now is probably like, oh, bugger. You know, because we didn't know these long historic low rate was going to hang around so long. Okay, so variable. And I guess it depends too whether it's a principal place of residence or an investment too. Does that play any difference? And what about some people I've heard will split their mortgage and they will fix half and then they'll go variable half, you know? Is that strategy still work?
Yeah, so again, that comes down to lending, the lending structure and the peace of mind that you want. So if you're paying principal and interest on your owner occupier, but you're using an offset account, and especially if you've got investment properties that are spinning off cash that's going into that account, then you're actually better off not having it fixed, because what happens is when that money sits in the account and each day they calculate the interest, the more money you've got sitting in that offset account is reducing. So when you make your payment, and there's a larger portion of that payment that is now principal being paid off versus interest.
Yes.
Okay. So if you've got half and half fixed, it's just not as effective.
Yes.
So it's about the strategy that you want to take, and as I said before, about peace of mind, really.
Because you are a bit more restricted when it's fixed as to how much you can pay it down.
Yeah. And what happens if there's a change in your circumstance? If you locked in for 3 years, because we're all really good at knowing exactly what we're going to do over the next 3 years, but you want to buy an investment property in a year's time, or there's a change in circumstances, or for work you've got to move, you know, there can be some very, very high costs in breaking a fixed term loan.
And honestly, when you've got a fixed loan and you know when it ends, it takes forever to get there. Just another question too around lending in general, you know, because quite often people will have their home loan, let's just say they've got one loan or whatever, with a particular bank, want to go off, use their equity, like we discussed in the last podcast, to go and buy another investment property. It's kind of natural to go back to the bank that you've always been with. What is, in your opinion, the difference between that and going to someone like a mortgage broker who, you know, it feels like they've got your best interest at heart. They're going around and looking and shopping and doing the research on all the best deals for you. What's your thought on that?
As a blanket statement, I would always use a broker. But you've got to qualify everything. There are some people's circumstances where a private banker and the situation that they're in is going to be better for them. But that's not for the majority of people. So for most people who are looking at, you know, a first home or just, you know, they haven't moved in 10 years or first investment property, you know, they're better off looking at someone who can shop it around. But by the same token, understand the outcome that you're looking to do and then make sure you interview the broker. Make sure you do the research on the things you need to know about that broker, because just because they're a mortgage broker doesn't mean that they're going to be the best at investing. When you understand the number, how few people have a multiple property portfolio, for example, there are actually very few brokers who are really skilled in that space. So you need to make sure, and like, you know, a good accountant, most people get a referral and they just go and use the accountant. You should always interview someone for the job that you're going to give them.
I love the idea of rocking up to the accountant and sitting down with like a clipboard and just interviewing them. Excuse me, I'd like to know this. Hey, quick question too, random. How does a mortgage broker actually make their money? Like, because some people might think, as a bit of a myth, that if they go with a mortgage broker, it's going to cost them more because they'll have fees built into that you will pay. What's the difference? Do you know how the fee structure works? Like how a mortgage broker actually makes their money?
So if you
from
just,
you and
just
this...
on that one, then if you walk into a bank and you're walking with their talking to their lender,
yes,
is that person getting paid?
Yes, but they're more so getting paid an hourly rate or part of their salary, right? I would imagine.
Well, there's different
that's
structures.
I'm asking you.
Yeah. So
I'm
there's different structures. Now. Look, at the end of the day, each bank works. Each lender works. How their channels provide the leads and the business, and they work a structure to pay that channel. Okay, so if you go into a bank, they will have some products that you can only get through a mortgage broker and some that you can only get through the bank, and that's sort of how they control it. It's about how do I get the best outcome? Because the reality is most people aren't going to go and interview 15 different lenders. You know,
no.
And you don't necessarily know what you're looking for. And you might be providing information to the bank where they would say no to you, that if you put it through a broker, they would say yes because they understand.
Well, they'd say just don't tell them that if it's a good broker.
I'm not buying into that one, Jade.
I can say that, Mel, you can't.
But sometimes, and it can happen between two brokers, is I've seen cases where two brokers have tried to put up the same client to the same lender and one's got it through and one hasn't, because it's about one's just more experienced in that type of lending and understanding how a credit assessor is going to review it. So that's where it comes back to that interviewing process. So the summary is a broker is generally going to get you a better outcome, but there's exceptions to that rule all the time.
Okay, I love it. We're going to leave it there. Thanks so much, Mel, for your intel on all things lending. And I'm so glad that variable rates. Who would have known? Look, if you've got a topic that you want us to discuss, don't be afraid to hit us up on social media, Jade Harrison Media, or just hit us up at hot91.com.au and let us know what topic, because I will drill down and get all the information out of Mel's brain. Love it. Thanks for coming in, Mel.
My pleasure.
For more on Hot 91's All Things Property with Direct Collective, head to hot91.com.au.